It's, again, my very great pleasure to introduce our next guest, Webster Tarpley. He is literally one of the world's foremost authorities on terrorism, false flag terrorism in particular. And we're so privileged to have him with us tonight. He has a live weekly radio program on the RBN network, that is the Republic Broadcasting Network, every Saturday from 1 to 3 in the afternoon. Don't miss that. Accolades are not difficult to find when it comes to describing Webster Tarpley. In 1978, while he was living in Rome, he was hired by a member of the Italian government to investigate the assassination of Aldo Moro. The results of that investigation were not that the Red Brigades, who were the Al-Qaeda, essentially, of their day in that area of the world, were responsible for this crime, but that the Red Brigades were actually a functioning arm of NATO intelligence. And, I mean, what better way to control the opposition than to become the opposition? Then you can pull all the strings and literally you can create history at your will. It's just it's a plan that these people would, it's just too good for these people to pass up. And, you know, history is filled with examples of this kind of thing. Webster Tarpley is also the author of the underground classic George Bush, the Unauthorized Biography, which is, I think we have some of those for sale out in the lobby. Unfortunately, we only have one copy left of his next underground classic, which is 9/11 Synthetic Terror, made in the USA. We thought we had enough for everyone tonight, but apparently not. The second edition of that book has just come out. The third edition is coming soon. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my very great honor to introduce to you all Webster Tarpley.
Thank you very much. I've been given 90 minutes. I want to thank the organizers. They've promised me the hook at 9:30, so I'm going to try to keep within the bounds. Although I usually don't. I want to thank the Seattle 9/11 Visibility Group, whose work is exemplary. They ought to do a short study of how they operate and send a case of them to many other parts of the United States to see how these things are actually done. So, congratulations. Without further ado, I want to also share with you the results of Barry Zwicker's box poll. For box one, the official version, the Kane-Hamilton Zelikow Commission, we have zero. For box two, the unanswered questions or incompetence negligence position with its variations, we have a total of 42 votes. For box three, the LIHOP or let it happen on purpose position, we have 92. And for box four, in the MIHOP column, made it happen on purpose, 292 votes. So this certainly tells us something of the temper of the times, and I'm sure we can get back to talk about some of these issues in just a moment. This is my thesis, that 9/11 is the central issue of our times, and it is the center of contemporary politics. It's the key to ending the Iraq War, to avoiding a wider war with Iran, to avoiding attacks on countries such as Syria, Venezuela, North Korea, and ultimately Russia and China. It is therefore the key to avoiding World War III. The thesis that I'd like to share with you at the beginning is that this is the issue that gives you the greatest bang for the buck of any issue that there is. And indeed, it's the only one that can change the course of world history over the next 6, 12, 18 months. Why so? There is in this country, I would say, a stratum of the population. It's about 35% to 40% of the United States. These are people of very low political sophistication, very low awareness. They're poorly informed. Above all, they are terrified. They are literally scared out of their wits. They have bought into the terror demagogy of the Bush-Cheney regime. And of course, there is no way to address them directly about issues that concern us, Iraq, Guantanamo, Abu Ghraib, torture, secret wiretapping, dictatorial totalitarian measures on the home front, black sites, renditions, and so forth. This 35 to 40% is largely impervious to all of those issues. They will say, if you confront them with any of these, this all has to be, that is the war on terror. We are defending ourselves against the September 11th attacks. You don't make any headway. You get no traction. Therefore, it is absolutely indispensable to put 9/11 truth into the center of all political activity. Are you anti-globalization? The same questions apply. Are you concerned about the situation of immigrants? The same. The demagogue Tancredo now says one of the reasons we need to put Mexicans in concentration camps is because Al-Qaeda is among them. They've been infiltrated. So this is the first refuge of every tin horn fascist demagogue. 9/11. And if we didn't know it ourselves, Karl Rove has reminded us with his speech in January, once again reminding us, as Barry recalled, that he has announced that 9/11 will be the signature issue of the Bush-Cheney Republican coalition for the year 2006. What more do we need? So therefore, I urge you not to heed the siren calls of people, I think, appearing even in this hall, who have told you that the 9/11 issue is dead. The 9/11 issue is not dead. Take it from Karl Rove and read it in the great book of political reality. 9/11 remains at the center of everything. So that's my motivation to people from other directions, right? The 9/11 movement is numerically limited, but the political impact is tremendous. And if others will join in on this and integrate this into their own agitation and propaganda, we will really begin to see tremendous results. Now, we have a problem, at least I feel, is with a group like this, and I don't know a lot of people here. You have some people who have just come in off the street knowing very little, and others who want to get to the most esoteric and recondite aspects of technical analysis. So I've got to try to do both, and I've also got to try to keep going. This is my book. I'm very happy to announce that this is currently the best seller on Amazon.com. It sells... In the last several weeks, and I think generally in 2006, it has sold more copies than the official version, more copies than Mike Rupert's book, more copies than David Ray Griffin, and so on down the line. And I think that there is a reason. It's somehow correlated with the prevalence of MyHop. If you're looking for full political MyHop, invisible government MyHop, rogue network MyHop, I'm afraid my book is the only one that's originally published in English that gives you that in a relatively consistent and relatively comprehensive way, as I'll try to show you. Now, my story, again, who am I? I came to this from studying NATO spheres of influence terrorism, geopolitical terrorism designed generally to defend the Yalta division of Europe. And this is the Italian Prime Minister Aldo Moro, having been kidnapped and about to be killed by the Red Brigades. He appeared in the Italian press in a picture with the news of his own kidnapping on the front page. And behind him was a flag that said Red Brigade. So when we made this in 1978, we took out the Red Brigades flag. We put in the British flag. We could have put in the NATO intelligence flag, but not many people know what that looks like. So this gave us a greater recognition. The idea is that this was, like 9/11, a state-sponsored, false flag, synthetic terrorist campaign, similar in that sense to the German Bader-Meinhof group. This is something that I wrote back in 1991 about the tendencies you could already see under Bush the Elder towards what I called at that time administrative fascism, a kind of top-down, bureaucratic, authoritarian repression which did not have the mass movement aspects at that time of the of the fascist movements, but which we now perhaps do in fact see. And here is George Bush, the unauthorized biography. This is the book that established the connection between Prescott Bush and Hitler. I won't go into any details, but the notion that Prescott Bush, the grandfather of the current tenant of the White House, was behind the rise to power of Hitler. He's part of the concentration camp management structure and also part of the management of the German Nazi military industrial complex. And you can see this book with a characteristic orange cover shows up in these war room. This is that guy. He's on television still, I think. There is the Bush and Carville, right? These to call these guys left gatekeepers would be giving them too much. But you can see how they conducted their campaign. They had a handbook, and that was it. Now, in terms of anniversaries, somebody said anniversaries before. Hey, Thursday was the 25th anniversary of the attempt to kill Reagan. No, wait a minute. Wait till you see. And this is a mistake, let me tell you. Reagan was wounded, right? The Houston Post, March 31st, 1981, right? That was 25 years ago, Thursday. But what do we see? Bush's son was to dine with suspect's brother. Wait a minute. Bush's son was to dine with suspect's brother. It turns out that the gunman Hinckley, the madman with Jodie Foster on his brain, had been meeting, he had an elder brother, Scott Hinckley, who had been meeting with none other than Neil Bush, Silverado Neil Bush, the brother of the current tenant of the White House, Neil also being the guy with the great connections to the Emir of Dubai, that well-known degenerate who has been so much in the news lately. And there it is again. But is it confirmed? Yes. Bush the elder now, vice presidential office, confirms that his son Neil was to have hosted Hinckley's brother at a dinner on April 1st, 25 years ago, yesterday. The dinner would have been on April 1st because the shooting was on the 31st, I think. And here's Silverado Neil in Denver confirming for the Rocky Mountain News, yes, he was interested in the oil business and Scott Hinckley was in it. So there he was. Now, with this kind of thing, wasn't that the basis then for a special prosecutor or some kind of an investigation? There was none because Bush the elder presided over a cabinet meeting saying that Hinckley was a lone gunman who had acted alone. So please let them not come to me with stories of conspiracy theories and paranoia when you have this kind of stuff going on in the world. This is no government of laws. This is an oligarchical zoo that we've got going, and these characters are the beneficiaries. And when you get to the Bush family, as I've documented, you are scraping the bottom of the barrel. So that was 25 years ago. So we're 25 years into a complete regime of lawlessness. Let me just point out, one of my big themes tonight is the question of drills, right, exercises. On that day, they had scheduled for the next day, the Friday, a presidential succession drill called Nine Lives, which indicates that part of the Hinckley operation was somehow conduited or bootlegged through the official U.S. government bureaucracy, that is, the assassination of Reagan went through the pipes of the official establishment under the cover of a succession drill. And this is a concept that I need, because this is what I want you to understand. If you want to have a large-scale synthetic terror operation, design it as a drill. Make it a drill that closely resembles what you want to do, so much so that replacing a few things, right, replacing one gas with another or powder with a nuclear bomb in a suitcase can give you the result that you want. Now, today we have to talk about 9/11, the most spectacular of these questions, and we're basking right now in the questions raised by Charlie Sheen. I have to say, Charlie Sheen has done more in 1 week than the entire Democratic Party in 5 years. He's gotten He's gotten 82 or 87% support. It's something like 85% support of the American people. And on March 20th, his famous interview with Alex Jones hit the airwaves. On that Friday, I was fortunate enough to be on the Alex Jones program with him. And we had then CNN headline news picking it up, Show Business Tonight, for three nights in a row. There was also a very interesting article in New York Magazine, which I recommend you can read online, nymag.com, I believe. And it looked for a while as if the dams were breaking. The worm was turning, as Charlie Sheen said. The worm is turning on 9/11, and I still think this is possible. It seems to me that there's a faction of the ruling class that wants to keep the 9/11 issue alive, shove it in Bush's face periodically, and use it to bludgeon Bush Cheney into some kind of submission on policy issues. They're very unhappy with the military defeat in Iraq. They're very unhappy with the death agony of the dollar, which we're living through. And somehow the resonance of what Charlie Sheen had to say, I think, hangs together with that. But we're living in a time of great hope in terms of 9/11 truth, because we've just gotten a cycle of publicity which is greater than anything attained really since the Kane-Hamilton Commission came out, and that was all negative, and the only thing in the meantime has been Jimmy Walter attempting to do these things with his own money. Now, my slide didn't come out too well, but if you want to see a good Charlie Sheen movie, I recommend Shadow Conspiracy. It shows him as a White House official fighting a rogue network. It's a network of four or five or six generals, top bureaucrats and others who want to kill the president and take over, have a coup, and Charlie Sheen is fighting them. I think this is vintage Charlie Sheen, and of course his association with Oliver Stone is well known. Now, the kind of terrorism we're dealing here is nothing new. This is 400 years ago last November 5th, another anniversary. Brackets, I do have a slideshow on this, which would take another 2 hours, so if people want to get it, I suppose they can come to me or they can come to the organizers. This is the 5th of November, 1605. The 5th of November, of course, is Barry's birthday, so we have to remember that. He thought that on Guy Fawkes Day they were celebrating his birthday. This is Guy Fawkes, right? These are the memes. Guy Fawkes with his boots and his spurs and his lantern going into the House of Lords. He wants to blow up the king, the lords, and the commons. James I, back in 1605, and he's being caught. This was blamed, of course, on the Pope and the Jesuits, and it led to the foundation of the British Empire in war with Spain and later with France. These are the patsies of that era, in particular Thomas Percy, a double agent, Robert Winter, another very likely double agent, and the chief dupe, the kind of Zacharias Moussaoui of the group in some ways, Guy Fawkes, who seems to have gone along because he just liked military affairs. He liked the idea of blowing things up. He'd been a soldier in the Low Countries and he'd blown up fortresses, and that was his job, so he liked to do it. Of course, this guy has been demonized so much that bin Laden, of course, is a relatively mild case in comparison. This is the target, you might say, King James I, who was not witting about the whole operation in advance, but Lord Cecil, the Prime Minister, and Venetian intelligence, the great power in the intelligence world at that time, wanted to push him into war with Spain. And he didn't want to have a war with Spain. As a matter of fact, he wanted to marry his son to the daughter of the Spanish king for reasons of money and power, but the Cecils and the Venetians didn't want that, and they won out. And here is the game master of the entire thing. This is Lord Robert Cecil. If you read Shakespeare's plays, you'll find him appearing in such roles as that of Caliban in The Tempest, the misshapen monster. This is him. His father is Polonius, but we can't get into all this. He is the organizer. He's the Prime Minister of England and the organizer of the gunpowder plot. So he tries to organize what the British would call an own goal against his own government. But, of course, he nips it in the bud, and the king owes him everything, and his position is assured for many years to come. More recently, we've had such cases as the blowing up of the Maine in Havana Harbor back in 1898. This is the calling card of the current rogue network. In my book, I attribute the crimes of 9/11 to an invisible government, rogue network, secret team, deep state, which goes back to the group that put the bomb inside the main, blew it up. All the indications are that the explosion came from inside the ship, not outside. This led to the Spanish-American War and to the founding of the American Empire. This is where we go from a republic to an empire. I would point out that the invisible government actually came into existence a few years earlier at the time of Grover Cleveland, when J.P. Morgan seized control of the public debt of the United States in the name of the British banks. That's the moment that the invisible government currently comes together. So therefore, I have to warn you, if you think that getting rid of Bush-Cheney will solve everything, this is a mistake. It is indispensable. I'm all for it. I work for it every day. But what we need is something much greater. We need to root out entrenched, invisible government networks of Wall Street financiers, London financiers, as well as neocons and their tools in the invisible government. The British, by the way, came along because they thought that the Germans might get the Spanish Empire, so they decided we'll give the Spanish Empire to the Americans. When Rudyard Kipling wrote Take Up the White Man's Burden, he was saying, please defend the British Empire from Germany by taking the Philippines. And this is the propaganda of the day, right? The Hearst Press. So here's the main. And here we have these Spaniards, right? We have algunos bin Ladenitos españoles. And they're looking through their periscope. And here's the ship. And here's the sinister underwater mine with the cables leading back. And they're about to blow it up. And it says up here, this picture fixes the responsibility to the satisfaction of the American people. But the picture is a complete fabrication. So nothing has changed. This is what we've had. This is what we have today. And of course, McKinley didn't really want the war, but he had no choice. McKinley was a whole lot better than Bush, who jumped on this immediately. So here we have the Hearst Press, right? The New York Journal, Journal American, pushing this hysterical war propaganda. We've also got the Gulf of Tonkin. This, I think, has a significance for people in the room who are maybe my age. All those people who died in Vietnam, all your friends and all the 3 million people in Indochina. Back last fall, the National Security Agency officially conceded that the Gulf of Tonkin had been a fake and that it had been done by middle-level employees covering up for their mistakes. So, too bad, 3 million dead. Think about what this means. Pause sometime in the next couple of days and think about what that meant for the agony of families and people who believed that, and the Congress that allowed itself to be stampeded with the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, just like the 9/11 resolution of September 01. Here's the equivalent of the Warren Commission report, the 9/11 Commission report. It is much inferior to the Warren Commission. It never attempts to prove anything. It starts off by assuming what you'd have to prove, and it takes it from there. That's the logical fallacy known as begging the question, petitio principi. And we had this dubious Ms. Rittenmeyer, I believe, on CNN Headline News. She happens to work for a company owned by one of Bush's fraternity brothers, and she said that she had been the producer of the National Geographic, and that really, you know, to the vulgar or to the uninstructed eye, it might look like controlled demolition, but if you read this book, it will clear it all up for you. Well, I'm afraid not. And then we have, of course, the patsies. Here we have you could think of Rudolph Valentino or somebody in the chic, right? Atta must have been looking at Rudolph Valentino movies for quite some time to learn that penetrating gaze, or perhaps Bela Lugosi in the Vampire, right? So here is an obvious, you know, bombastic, lurid production of Anglo-American demonic propaganda. And you're supposed to believe that this guy seized controls of the airplane and flew Flight 11 into the North Tower. And we have this collection of patsies. This one in particular, Hani Hanjour, is one of consummate ineptitude, a basket case in the true sense. Jarrah probably a little bit better off, especially since there were at least two of him, and so on through the entire list. Now, we have some problems believing this, of course, because the same intelligence establishment that is so emphatic that they know who the hijackers were, just a few months later, had to admit that they were all wrong about Iraq. The problem, if you believe any of the Bush stuff, if you believe the official version, you essentially argue, as these left liberals do, Bush was a liar until September 11th. Then he was transmogrified into a teller of truth for several months, but then by the State of the Union of 2002 in January, he started telling lies again because he wanted to go to Iraq. So I think it's a bit of a stretch. Now, the way that I look at all this is summed up in this conceptual diagram, which I commend to your attention. You have patsies, you have moles, you have professional killers. The patsies are the ones that you see, the ones we've just been seeing, Bin Laden, Atta, we're going to see Mousawi in a minute, Richard Reed, the shoe bomber, useful idiots, fanatics, police agents, double agents, provocateurs, Oswalds. And Oswald said it, I'm just a patsy. These are the people who take the fall. They are scapegoated and destroyed. They are supported before the terrorist action by the moles, the government officials loyal to a private network, people like David Frasca of the FBI, who gets the Minneapolis report and the Phoenix report and proceeds to sit on them and to do nothing. And a guy called Rosintel, I think his name is, who was his boss, who appeared in Alexandria, Virginia, at the Mousawi trial a couple of days ago. So they're loyal to the private network. And then we have the others, the professional killers, are the people who do have the physical, technical ability to bring about the effects observed. The patsies can have all kinds of criminal intent, and I would not deny that. They are criminally insane in many cases and would love to kill large numbers of people. The problem is that they don't have the physical, technical equipment to do it, but the professional killers do. These are the technicians, CIA, old boys, special forces, the so-called asteroids, the Iran-Contra networks as they evolved into the 90s and into the aughties. And these people also have the ability that since they're old boys with security clearances and friends, they can take part in using government resources for the crimes. They can help to conduit the actions through the government. So these, again, the patsies, not able to do what they're supposed to do. Even the so-called, I think the average weight of a muscle hijacker was about 150 pounds, and they're going up against these huge football player types who are the military veteran pilots of these airplanes. The entire story is completely fantastic.